Insurgents breach Syria's second largest city. He sang thanks to the efforts of the heroic Mujahideen, these areas have been liberated from Assad's militias. It appears to be part of a bigger shift in the Middle East.
I think the redrawing of the geopolitical map in the region is the main reason. What started in Israel and Gaza and then moved to Lebanon, including different airstrikes inside Syria and Iraq, is really pushing all regional actors to change their calculations.
Today is Friday, November 29th, and this is The Issue from VOA. I'm Scott Walterman in Washington. Syrian armed groups have launched a large-scale attack on areas controlled by government forces, setting off fierce battles for a second day in seizing territory in western Aleppo. Associated Press correspondent Karen Chalmers has more.
Syrian insurgents have breached Syria's second-largest city, Aleppo, after blowing up two car bombs and were clashing with government forces on Friday, according to a Syria war monitor and fighters. Insurgents have been approaching Aleppo city for days and have seized several towns and villages along the way. It was the first time the city has been attacked by opposition forces since 2016, when they were ousted from Aleppo's eastern neighborhoods. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a war monitor, said the insurgents blew up two car bombs at the city's western edge on Friday. An insurgent commander issued a recorded message posted on social media, calling on the city's residents to cooperate with the advancing forces. I'm Karen Chamas.
Now, the Russians are also weighing in on the fighting. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Russia, which has forces in Syria backing Syrian President Bashar Assad, regarded the rebel attack as a violation of Syria's sovereignty and wanted the authorities to act fast to regain control. The attack is the biggest since March 2020, when Russia and Turkey, which supports some of the rebels in the northwest, agreed to a deal that de-escalated the conflict. All right, so let's see if we can get a better picture of what's going on. Joining us now is Ibrahim Alassi, a senior fellow at the Middle East Institute in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what you think are behind these attacks in Aleppo.
So I think there is a clear regional dimension in this battle. Of course, there are the local reasons inside Syria that while the fighting stopped over the last 4 years, there was no solution or framework to end the conflict inside Syria. However, I don't think that was the direct reason for the ongoing fighting. I think the redrawing of the geopolitical map in the region is the main reason. What started in Israel and Gaza and then moved to Lebanon, including different airstrikes inside Syria and Iraq, is really pushing all regional actors to change their calculations as well. And I don't see Turkey as an exception here. For Turkey, northern Syria, it's its own backyard. And clearly at this point, Turkey sees an opportunity in pushing more against the regime, probably hoping that it will get more concessions, or some concessions at least, from Assad in the future.
I think a lot of people are talking about a general realignment in the region. Hezbollah took a bad hit, which in turn means Iran took a bad hit, Hamas as well. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
So this, all of what you've mentioned, I agree with, and I think they played as a catalyst in this equation, that they offered the Syrian opposition and the regional backers an opportunity. They see that it is the right time to push against the regime. Hezbollah has been degraded in Lebanon and in Syria. The Lebanese-Syrian borders, all the crossing that Hezbollah and the regime used to transfer weapons and fighters have been damaged. And same applies to the Iranian-supported militias in Iraq and in other places that they used to come to support the regime at such a point. I think all of that offers the Syrian opposition an opportunity to push against the regime. I still think, however, that the collapse or the rapid collapse of the regime forces was unexpected. I think the opposition probably expected to take many villages and towns around Aleppo, but not to be able to push inside the city of Aleppo that quickly and within probably 30 to 36 hours of starting the fighting.
Yeah, you'd mentioned some airstrikes. I know that Russia and Syrian air forces have been hitting this group, the HTS, which which oddly is also categorized as a terrorist group by many of the Western nations. Would you think that that kind of that they'd just been hitting them and that was also part of the catalyst for their attack?
I think they were trying to hit them continuously over the last few months, probably to keep them at bay and to also make sure that they don't get this chance, because it was becoming clearer and clearer that sooner or later there will be an attack by those forces. And they are radical and militant forces. Of course, there are different types of groups in this composition, but it's led by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham was an affiliate of Al-Qaeda over a decade ago. They broke, they severed the ties with Al-Qaeda, but they are still a radical group. Many Syrians are watching now to see what new face this group has, what are they gonna offer, or how they're gonna treat the local population. I would add that this attack is not getting us anywhere closer to a solution for the Syrian crisis. It actually shows that the conflict is still ongoing, and it will probably move from one phase to another with different intensity of violence. But at this point, everything is possible. All actors are changing their calculations, and the future is more and more seems uncertain.
You're right. After HTS broke with Al-Qaeda, they tried to sort of, I guess, rebrand themselves, right, as being more moderate. What do they want?
So that's a very good question, because not only observers and analysts and journalists are asking that question, also Syrians themselves are asking that question. What's next? Let's say if HTS controls Aleppo, to what end? What's the point? And many of those observers and many Syrians as well, they see the regional role in this war. Many of those groups are backed by Turkey, and there is no way such a major battle will start without being cleared by Ankara. And I do see here that for Turkey, there is also an opportunity, and there is a goal for Turkey, for President Erdogan. He reached out to President Assad multiple times over the last couple of years to negotiate and to start some sort of negotiations on the future of the Turkish forces inside Syria and the northeast and the northwest, which are outside the Syrian control. However, Assad conditioned those talks by a full withdrawal of the Turkish forces from the Syrian territories before they start. So Assad showed that it's still a zero-sum game for him. While I think Turkey wanted Assad to offer some concessions, probably to allow some sort of decentralized governance in those regions, so refugees could go back from Turkey inside Syria to some safe areas in the north. Assad didn't offer that, and I see now why Turkey would want to push against Assad, forcing him to offer some concession in these negotiations, or at least to accept to sit at the table without any conditions.
Well, Erdogan is he's interesting because he has this relationship with both both the East and the West, with Russia and the West. And so he's sitting on this, you know, fence balancing between the two. What else do you think he wants out of all of this?
Regional influence, if I was to put it in just two words. I think what's happening there is that the geopolitical map is being redrawn in the region. And for all the middle powers, in the region, we're talking about Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Iran, the UAE, and Israel, they all want to reshape the outcome out of that. And Turkey hasn't been included in all the talks and the negotiations that have been going on for the last few months. We've seen, of course, Israel emerging as a strong power in the region that could dictate different conditions, not only in Israel and the Palestinian territory, but also in Lebanon, Syria, and to a certain extent, probably in Iraq and against Iran. We've seen Saudi Arabia trying to play a diplomatic role. And we've seen, of course, Iran over the last decade playing a huge role in the region. So I think Turkey wants to assert itself, especially in what President Erdogan see as his own backyard in northern Syria, to be able to pressure Assad and also to pressure his backers. We're talking about the Russians and the Iranians. So the ceasefire between the opposition, the Syrian opposition forces, and Assad on the other side was brokered by both the Russians and the Turks. But now the calculations are different, and each side is trying to reshape the outcome in a different way. And I think that's where this push comes from, and that's probably what Turkey is trying to achieve.
We're seeing, we talked about earlier in the conversation, you're referencing it now, this shift in the entire region, particularly the catalyst, through the lens of the catalyst of the Israeli-Hezbollah-Israeli-Hamas war, where, you know, there are a lot of countries that did not mind seeing Iran and its proxies get knocked back a little bit. If you had to guess what we're going to see in the next 6 months, a year, as this recalibration continues, what do you think that might look like?
I totally agree that many regional powers are not shedding any tears for Hezbollah or for the Iranian-backed militias. However, they also, or what happened, prompted new concerns for them, because there is a vacuum, and that vacuum is widening. And the natural consequence for that is for different regional players trying to fill that vacuum directly or through proxies and through armed groups that they support. And that's why I expect the next phase to be volatile and to have lots of uncertainty. And while we reached a ceasefire, it's a very cautious ceasefire in Lebanon, but it's holding so far. But that won't be the end of it. We don't know what's going to happen in the rest of Lebanon domestically. We don't know what's going to happen in Syria with so many domestic, regional, and global actors. And then we also have Iraq and Yemen and Iran itself. I think everybody realizes that there are so many question marks, and there is a vacuum that's widening in the region, and everyone will try at least to reshape the outcome. And if they're not able to, or if they still don't have a vision for how they want the outcome to be, at least to be seen as an active actor and as a considerable power in the region.
Well, you're not wrong. There are a lot of players in this game, both regional, home, you know, grown players and international players who are there, including Russia and the United States. So I think you're right. It's going to be interesting over the next 6 months. Yeah,
absolutely. I think things will keep developing and probably will go in a direction that no one has anticipated yet.
Huh. Thank you so much for the info and the perspective.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Ibrahim Alassi, the senior fellow at the Middle East Institute in Washington. This has been The Issue from The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. Follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, our website is voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.